Welcome back to episode 172. Joe, how you doing?
Isn't this 173?
I think it's 172.
Oh, you could be right. I'd hate to have an on-air argument with you over
Well,
that. I'll accept your number.
if I'm
172.
right, then
I
well,
jumped the gun.
yeah.
No, I'm fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thanks. So, this week, with some interesting developments. First, there was this I sent you that video of Tom Renz, the lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess he was interviewed by John Rappaport. And I guess he's a part of this group, Ohio Stands Up. At least he's representing them. He filed a lawsuit in their behalf against the state of Ohio to remove the unconstitutional emergency order. It states, "We believe that the response to COVID-19 has been the greatest fraud ever perpetrated on the American public," Attorney Tom Renz said. "Determined to restore the constitutional rights that have been stripped away by the state of Ohio's unjustified actions regarding COVID-19. Ohio Stands Up has filed suit in Northern District of Ohio Federal Court to remove Governor Mike DeWine's emergency order. The group is represented by attorneys Tom Renz and Robert Gargaz. We believe that the response to COVID-19 has been the greatest fraud ever perpetrated on the American public," Renz said. "The objective of this legal action is to force the state to honor the Constitution and to stop the lies, manipulation, and fear-mongering intentionally being promoted by public health officials and elected officials. Several national experts will testify on behalf of Ohio Stands Up. Renz and Gargaz will release the extensive evidence that chronicles the case to the public to offer transparency and insight. The state of Ohio has consistently lied and manipulated its citizens from the early stages of this pandemic," Gargaz explained. "We insist that this nonsense end, our rights be restored, and the actual truth be shared. Recently, the CDC confirmed that 94% of the deaths attributed to the virus were from people who had many or as two or three other serious illnesses. As many as two or three other serious illnesses. The majority of the deaths are individuals 75 years of age and older. The U.S. economy was shut down based on fraudulent models that predicted 2.2 million American deaths," Renz said. "The state of Ohio violated the U.S. Constitution with an emergency declaration that ignores the fundamental rights of all Ohioans. As a result, millions of Ohioans are suffering financially, physically, and mentally." Renz and Gargaz pointed out that hundreds of thousands of businesses are struggling and many will never reopen. Drug overdoses and suicides have increased, as have domestic violence and child abuse cases, directly as a result of the unconstitutional emergency order. Children are struggling emotionally, as many are forced into continued isolation of remote learning, while two-income households must find solutions to manage young children at home. Masks are dangerous, prevent proper breathing, and provide no real protection against the virus. According to multiple studies, families have been barred from seeing their loved ones in hospitals and long-term care facilities, and residents in long-term facilities have suffered because the lack of in-person communication from their loved ones. People living alone of all ages have been forced into solitary confinement and are dying at a tremendously increased rate due to loneliness and a lack of self-care. The state of Ohio has ignored fundamental constitutional rights for a virus that is no more dangerous than the seasonal flu. A rapidly growing number of Ohioans recognize this and understand that if they don't stand up and speak out, it could be too late because, as precedent has been set, according to Gargaz, that there is zero basis for a state of emergency, Renz said. "Based on what we know about the consequences the emergency order has caused to the physical, financial, and mental well-being of Ohioans, the vitality of Ohio communities, this is truly a crime against humanity and must not be allowed to continue. The lawsuit is solely funded by donations from Ohio citizens." As the state continues to double down on the continued fraud, going so far as to create FEMA concentration camps, we are working to shine light of truth on this dark reality of the COVID response. Ohio Stand Up is making progress in shining light. Oh, sorry, I skipped there. Recent days have seen some the most incredible steps yet taken in Ohio's response to a disease that is only slightly more dangerous to most people than a seasonal flu influenza. Pursuant to the Non-Congregate Shelter Second Amended order, the state is creating FEMA camps to place people that are unable to self-isolate and showing symptoms of COVID-19. Ohio, Tom Rentz said, in working with our doctors and other experts, we have become particularly troubled by this order. The symptoms of COVID-19 are the same or similar to the common cold, allergies, influenza, and other, and even the side effects of some common medications. Since the test is inaccurate, even when used on the governor, how will we know who to imprison, and how will this imprisonment impact these people? Attorney Robert Gargan asked, isn't this similar to what Governor Cuomo did in nursing homes in New York, putting potentially sick and healthy people together in the same settings? Are we poisoning healthy? He goes on to ask, with new reports that deaths are now below pre-pandemic levels, how can these actions be justified? Governor DeWine noted recently that the state would be eligible for additional funds for undertaking this project. This seems to indicate that the state makes money for imprisoning people without trial. Ohio stands up as happy, however, to announce that this appears to that it appears we'll be able to enter into the discovery stage of the trial soon. Attorney Redden said, discovery is a critical part of this trial. The state has consistently told us that there is a public health crisis, but refused to share their basis for this assertion. As we proceed through discovery, the state will no longer be able to hide their data and models. We will finally be able to see the truth and determine how dangerous this crisis really is. We look forward to disposing the relevant state and federal official. I'm sorry, deposing, disposing. We look forward to deposing the relevant state and federal officials and saying that they have what they have to say under oath. So that's interesting. I mean, fighting on the legal front, put them on the stand, cross-examine them, may force them to present evidence, even under oath, penalty of of perjury.
What an amazing concept to get people in elected positions to actually disclose to the public the reason for their behavior. I mean, this is almost like democracy. I'm just stunned. Hats off to Rents. This is exactly the approach I've been hoping that would be taken. And I have some kind of sideways communication with him. I'm in touch with someone in Oregon who's trying to model the Oregon response to Renzi's in Ohio. And if you listen to this and are interested in slowing down the FEMA camps in Oregon, just shoot me an email at joeatwell@gmail.com and I'll put you in touch with Greg and the people in Oregon who are trying to basically do the same thing there, and they're hoping to actually hire Rents, but I mean, there's only one of them, and there is these res he needs more money to get more attorneys. But just let me point out, Tim, that the FEMA camp criteria is the same that is in Melbourne in the omnibus bill that so many people are afraid of. And it simply gives government the right to incarcerate for no period of time with an end to it that's defined. And if you look at, as Renz pointed out in his response, that the symptoms of COVID are any illness that creates a temperature and cough or headache, anything like this. So it just gives the government dictatorial powers, and it actually outlines camps that is going to put Americans in without trial until the government decides it's safe for them to get out. I would just say that this is just as dangerous as anything imaginable to the American people, because bear in mind, there is no true virus out there that is rationale for this draconian type behavior. So therefore, you have to look for malevolence as the basis, right? It just you have to look for that. And when you have that rationale, you can see that they're going to starve us and they're going to incarcerate us, and with the goal of population reduction. So to create legal efforts right now, I don't think that any of these have any hope whatsoever in the long run in terms of the legal system. I think it's just it's axiomatic that a government that is well organized enough to pull off the plandemic and evil enough to do that will have a way to subvert any sort of legal action. However, you could win, and I think they will win at lower levels, of course, but by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, you're just dealing with the Judeo-Masonic Iron Dome, and you're not going to be able to penetrate it. But that's beside the point, because the most important thing that will happen from these legal efforts is what Rentz described in that great letter that you read, in which, under oath and with expert questioning, the officials will be brought into the light as liars. And that hopefully will wake the public up. And when they do expose the lies and the fraud that the governments, all the different governments in the United States, are using to keep the Iron Dome of COVID on top of us, and they point out that this has now become the rationale for these FEMA camps, I'm thinking that that's actually going to wake somebody up. Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, it's arousing the public is the only, I think, long-term effective weapon against this, because, again, like you said, you're not going to vote our way out of this or litigate our way out of this. Ultimately, it requires the public to be non-compliant and withdraw their support, their consent, repeal the mandate of heaven, if you will, from the state, because the state is, at this point, is thoroughly corrupted. The various Western governments are vassal states of the oligarchs, and that's, this crisis or this scamdemic has demonstrated that. And yeah, the posture, position of the Supreme Court, I think you can get an idea from their, I think last June, they just Justice Roberts, who said that closing down or keeping the churches closed in California was not a violation of the First Amendment. Well, because there's an emergency.
Right. Yeah.
and again, it goes to the idea of challenging the factual basis, for said emergency is important, because it is illegal to declare a false emergency. There are laws against it, and so presumably the people who are involved in this could be punished. There's the international lawsuit, and this is that German attorney, Dr. Rainer Fulmich. He also had an interesting video, about 50 minutes long. He goes into detail about the substance of their case for a mass class action lawsuit against the various governments. And, so we have these various lawsuits in the United States and Europe being filed. And this is a guy who's, I think, litigated against Deutsche Bank and VW Audi. But he says, I've been practicing law against fraudulent corporations for over 26 years. We must ensure that on a political level, never again should anyone be allowed to be in a position to defraud humanity and attempt to manipulate us with their corrupt agendas. He's right. What we have here is fraud and malfeasance in office. Dr. Fulmich is one of four members of our German Corona Investigative Committee. Now, this is an extra parliamentary committee that was formed. This is something that needs to be done, because we can't rely on our governments to represent us and to do justice. So the people have to form extra parliamentary, extra governmental bodies. We have a system in the United States like the grand jury, and it can be employed. A good example was in the Oklahoma City bombing, when the people in Oklahoma lacked confidence in the federal investigation, Charles Key's grand jury investigation, which revealed a lot, raised a lot of questions and undermined the official narrative of the Oklahoma City bombing. And that was a grand jury, which was harassed by the national media, by federal authorities. States wouldn't comply, these things. But the fact that they were so harassed gives an idea how effective they were, at least the threat they pose. So there are weapons we can use in our legal system, our political system, if the people are aware of them and they have the ability to avail themselves of it and actually use them. But Dr. Fulmich is one of the four members of this Corona Investigative Committee. Since July, the committee has been receiving testimony and evidence from some of the world's eminent scientists and medical professionals as part of building a mountain of evidence to help put behind bars all those psychopaths who have committed crimes against humanity in their COVID-19 scam. The Corona crisis will have to be renamed the Corona scandal, and everyone involved must be criminally prosecuted and sued for damages, said the international litigator. I hope they're, draw in people like Bill Gates and his foundation, and maybe Soros, and as these connections are made, all these foundations and these corporate, perhaps even the corporations. Legal analysts see direct parallels between the war crimes and the agenda, events, and outcomes of today, whereby many tens of thousands of innocent people have either lost their lives, and many hundreds of millions have suffered devastating emotional and physical and financial injury in the cause of population control. And there is, I mean, I saw this, this was sent to me about the, how, what a crime all this is, and how there are laws against this. During the past 8 months, the people of the world have been broadsided by a highly coordinated perpetration of fraud and global violation of law by the very institutions charged with making these laws. The scale and scope of the scamdemic is staggering. Previously, Dr. Reinhard Fulmich, he had the video discussing the findings of the International Committee of Lawyers, Doctors, and Scientists. They've determined the governments are liable under civil tort law for harm caused by their lockdowns. The governments can be held responsible for the damages that have inflicted upon the population. I would also say NGOs and foundations could too, as he roped them into the case. That individuals are entitled to receive full compensation for the losses caused by their governments, and that the avenues to pursue this in the class action lawsuit and maybe go after Bill Gates's billions. There is a federal law, I think it's code 1038, and it's about providing false information hoaxes. There's also federal code 1040, which it makes fraud in connection with a major disaster or trying to benefit from a major disaster, fraudulent claims. California government has code 8630 calling for a local emergency when there isn't one. That's a crime. Can you imagine the mayors and governors are caught up in that, like Newsom? If these are indeed crimes, and there's also California Penal Code 504, public officer when they fraudulently use a public property or funds. So you talk about all the money that's being used to promote this scam, all that could be considered under that law. And so you have these cases like in Ohio, maybe in Washington State or Oregon rather, and in California, and you establish a factual basis, undermine the factual basis for the emergency, then you can build a criminal case. And that you could find that, they were intentionally spreading false information in coordination with, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the World Health Organization, the CDC, that these are actually criminal operations, and hold these people accountable. That's, I wouldn't hold my breath for that, but at least there is an avenue for that. And again, the benefit, at least, of getting these cases in the court and the publicity behind them is arousing the public to the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I would say that the first and last purpose of the legal efforts is to create information and publicity to rouse the public. I think there is no chance whatsoever of, for example, successfully getting someone like Christine Whitman out of office, something like this. I just see that we've done 170 shows showing that there is a secret society that controls the government, controls the media. And so it is impervious in general to these kinds of actions because it would have levers of controls at certain points along the process that would end up with real activity being generated. In other words, like removing Newsom or Cuomo from office or putting someone in jail. That isn't going to happen, and that shouldn't be the goal. And that if we don't get there, that doesn't mean these efforts aren't successful. What they can do is create documented facts which will come from the mouths of the lifetime actors and the malevolent government officials themselves. And if the lawyers in doing the examination do the right kind of job, where they're trying to impeach the witnesses, which will be easy for them to do, then they can take this and go to the public and say, look, they're lying. The whole basis for the lockdown was false. Moreover, the legal system is illegitimate. The same people who created the lockdown and who control the media have control over the legal system. So these are critical elements of understanding for the Western world to understand, because it isn't just the United States. It's not just Australia. It's in Germany. The infection is in England. It's everywhere, right? The Judeo-Masonic society has crept in and control and has figured out which elements to control to have power. And now it does. And it's using the power to wipe out the Europeans. So this is our situation. And we need to resist it in two phases. The first is to arouse more of the public than we currently have. I think the rate of crossover from the normie to the awakened citizen is accelerating.
Mm-hmm.
More and more people who I just meet, you know, kind of had known casually, who poo-pooed the conspiracy theories are now scratching their head. So this is why the first phase is just this massive insertion of the truth to wake people up to the fact they've been enslaved in a way without their knowing it, that there were lifetime actors, that people like Trump and Hillary Clinton have a face that you think is whatever you think it means in terms of how the media presents it. But in back of that, there are allegiances and oath taking and a society that can create the propaganda, the narrative, as they call it, right? So this is what the public needs to wake up to. Once they know that it is propaganda, the first thing is the propaganda will stop working. But from that point, once we have, say we get Tim in like 3 months as the FEMA camps are starting to get crowded, so you get like 10% of the population, you know, that goes, you know, this is wrong. These groups that are controlling things are evil. Now you're going to have to fight back. So that is going to require organization, because it is going to be a real fight, not a political fight per se. It's going to be a fight. They're not going to want to give up any of their power. They have a lot of control, obviously, over the military and technology. So when we decide that enough is enough and we want to survive, we're going to act. We have to act really quickly and have a kind of asymmetrical response. We can't just, you know, organize ourselves like the Proud Boys and march out with their ARs and try to, you know, stop, you know, whatever military they bring to bear. We have to keep corrupting their power base with no more compliance. You know, we just refuse to go along with the slave training. And then two, we have to get more information into the groups that they use to control us, into the military, into the police, into things even like the CIA, because those groups, I know that the infection goes probably through the into the mid-level management, but it doesn't go all the way to every agent. Once the resistance starts to gain attraction, and more people are saying this is obviously an attack, then hopefully these organizations will start to rot from the inside in terms of the control that secret society has over them, because more and more mid-level people inside these systems will say, I'm not going to obey anymore. Our lack of compliance should go right up the chain of command, Tim, as high as it can, so that we all stop complying. All of the Europeans have to stop complying. We have to realize that the system of authority, our political system, has been completely infected and is designed to destroy us. So when you talk about lack of compliance, Tim, I just couldn't agree more, and I'm so glad that you mention it almost every single show, and I just want to encourage the process of the lack of compliance to really accelerate, because that is what we need to do. We have to stop obeying police orders. We have to stop obeying the military command if you're soldiers. We have to just stop being part of what, you know, is being used to destroy ourselves.
A good example is this last week when Trump supposedly went to the hospital. Now he's out and he's fine. Now they're trying to make it, they're calling White House, the Rose Garden press conference, announcing the Supreme Court nominee as a super spreader event. Tony Fauci's off running around talking about this stuff. Now, Kayleigh McEnany, the White House spokesperson, most people supposedly tested positive. Of course, we all know how bogus that is. Of course, she says she tested positive for COVID. She was on Fox News. But she said she has no symptoms. But the hardest part, she said, was separating herself from her 10-month-old baby for 14 days.
Just heartbreaking.
So she's asymptomatic, but she's going to abandon her child for 14 days. She's not even sick. So what this is doing is that
that's would have like a one chance in like 50 million or something of getting seriously sick if you passed it. Yeah, I mean, this
is just conditioning people to accept separation, separating parents from children.
Yep.
Based
it's
on bogus test results?
It's exactly right. It's propaganda. It's just they're just trying to create the criteria for our behavior to change.
You can't have any normal functioning of government. Like you have Chucky Schumer claiming we can't have hearings for the Supreme Court nominee confirmation hearings because of the virus, the phantom virus.
But I guess we have to shut the government down, but I think they can still get those FEMA camps set up.
Yeah,
somehow.
I love that. Yeah.
Well,
yes.
Like, how isn't that going to be a super spreader? I mean, what is this business with the FEMA camps if everything else is shut down? It seems like slavery and the destruction of the population never slows down for some reason.
No, yeah, it's right. Now, of course, allegedly, a militia group decided to take action, right? In Michigan, there was a reported plot to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer. A militia group whose members planned to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer was attempting to instigate a civil war through attacks on the state capitol building and targeting police officers, officials said Thursday. Well, who are these officials? Members of the group identified by Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel as the Wolverine Watchmen are accused of crimes such as conducting surveillance outside Whitmer's vacation home, using code language, and encrypted messages and putting a bomb under a bridge to distract police. In total, 13 members were charged with felony crimes, including the six who were charged for the governor kidnapping plot, the Detroit Free Press reported. Nessel described members as extremists who were trying to gain members by seizing a moment of civil unrest in the U.S. There has been disturbing increase in anti-government rhetoric and reemergence of groups that embrace extremist ideologies, Nessel said at a press conference. Well, this is a disturbing level of government misbehavior, I guess.
Right.
This is more than just political disagreement or passionate advocacy. Some of these groups' mission is simply to create chaos and inflict harm upon others.
Is he talking about Antifa?
Well, it turns out that it looks like these people were like Antifa anarchists, but nevertheless, they're called white supremacists for some reason. Nessel said these other Wolverine Watchmen members allegedly requested other members to find the home addresses of police officers, made threats of violence, then instigated a civil war leading to societal collapse. That sounds like the World Economic Forum. Why don't they arrest them? Federal court documents indicate that the militia intended to complete their plans before the November election, but the investigation, which included paid undercover informants and 200 state and federal law enforcement officials, conducted search warrants in more than a dozen cities and halted the plan before it could be executed. Well, that's funny. I mean, do you think how what do you think chances that these paid informants kind of got these guys thinking about this plan and maybe, had some beer money, started having talk, chatting online, and they arrested them? Of course, this conveniently comes right after the Michigan Supreme Court slapped down Governor Whitmer, calling her executive orders and her COVID policies dictatorial, unconstitutional. So she's now a victim.
Remember when in the Charlie Hebdo massacre where the terrorists comes out and he fires an AR into the guy's chest, who's on the concrete, and no blood or anything comes out.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how fake, I mean, that is how fake this is. This is just ridiculous. And the idea that a dozen cities, give me a break. I mean, yeah, we're gonna kidnap the governor, and we're gonna like have people from a dozen cities in our organization. You know, I mean, it just is ridiculous.
Well,
so
an organization that plans to create chaos in multiple cities simultaneously. Yeah. What does that sound like?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. So they should, like, yeah. I mean, maybe Soros will fund them. You know,
and then, Soros giving them money. Yeah.
Yeah, and then this is just preposterous. So like you're saying, it's just propaganda. There's going to be a lot of this going forward, because we've discussed so many times over the last couple of months. You're going to have a ratcheting up of the provocation of the white middle class. Mm-hmm. They're going to get Antifa and the BLM guys to go into the suburbs, and there's going to be confrontations. I mean, we've already seen it, you know, in Kenosha. But I think that you're going to have quite a few episodes of that. And the media, which is clearly part of the secret society project, will then characterize the moral structure as white supremacists against people fighting for freedom, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. This was, you know, this purported attempt to kidnap the governor was just, I think, the beginning of this genre. It's going to be common over the next couple months. And to some extent, it actually will have real facts as the basis for, you know, the representation to the public, because like you saw in Kenosha, you can get into a situation very quickly where you're going to have a civil war, or at least a kind of civil war, where you have armed combatants from, you know, the defensive group, and the people have been bussed in. In Kenosha, you could really see, you know, the outlines of the civil war that I think they would love for us to have, in the fact that the BLM guys had weapons. You know, they weren't there just, you know, with pocket matches to burn stuff. When Rittenhouse was running away, you could hear them, you know, talking, the BLM guys, or, I mean, I think these were, you know, it's hard to say, BLM, they're Antifa. They are talking, and you can hear them on the tape saying, you know, cranium. In other words, you know, shoot in the head. They wanted to kill this individual, and they had the weapons to do it. They had brought these weapons in, and you could clearly see it, because the guy that Rittenhouse blew the arm off of had a handgun. Mm-hmm. And the person who was coming up to kill him also had a handgun. So obviously there are lots of handguns and probably even ARs in the hands of the protesters. So, you know, you're bound to get a situation where rounds get exchanged. And then when that happens, then the media will have the civil war that they've been hoping to have. I think that the civil war will be, you know, just a turn. They'll try to create it, of course, and they already are. But they'll try to have it presented to the public as a moral drama theatrical production, you know, where they'll attempt to have a few of the white side exposed as a racist. You know, they'll have background checks, and they'll find, you know, Facebook posts indicating this individual was, you know, hated blacks or something, hated lesbians, you know, whatever, hatred. And then that will be presented to the public as, you can see that the people who fight back are motivated by hatred, and we should be supporting this cultural new normal wherein Antifa and the BLM are becoming, you know, politically on top of the white middle class, that they will be you know, the ones who will have the support of the political class and the whatever police are left. I think that's just broad stroke what is going on, and I think why they will try to provoke a civil war. I'm pretty sure that is on the table right now. And then from there, it's just going to be, you know, it's to some extent, it'll be like whatever how it unfolds. Because if you have real slaughter, in other words, if say you have a determined group of you know white defenders of a middle class enclave who have you know the technical skills with weapons to kill a bunch of these people, and they kill several hundred of them, for example. Well, now the question is will the spirit just dissipate? I remember in you know in the 60s when it after Kent State, how quickly the desire to go into these protests collapsed. It was also the draft was ending too, but you know people were simply afraid. And I think if you have a few real bloodbaths, I think it'll be harder to get the fentanyl brigade to you know assemble, because they obviously have no real allegiance to the Soros esoteric kind of lesbian you know BLM mission statement cause. They're just along for the ride
Well,
and
yeah,
the drugs.
there's been this police stand down and the dereliction of local authorities
Sure,
for
sure.
just by
So
standing down, you foment the violence. That coupled with those behind the scenes paying for it, like the people paying for U-Haul trucks to supply these people,
And I'm sure that's when Venice, California, which used to be very tony, it was always very eccentric, but it was upscale, you know, fancy restaurants. You could spend a lot of money on Venice Beach, I'll tell you. Movie stars would be seen there, that kind of thing. Well, now it is a homeless camp, just tip to stern. It's just beyond belief. The middle class businesses are gone. There's graffiti and boarded up windows. And on every sidewalk, you have absolutely, you know, no other word than filthy, homeless encampments, just one after another after another. So this has been a total economic and cultural transformation. And I kind of want to go down there. I'm a little worried just because, you know, I'd have to get a disguise, and you know how good I am with those, but I know I'd have to disguise myself as an Antifa homeless person. You know, I'd like to get documentation on how these guys are getting money, because they're not panhandling. The panhandling days are gone. There's no middle class to give them money. So there has to be some flow of cash. I'm sure there's a lot of government largesse, but I bet you that there's a pipeline of some kind of Soros or other oligarch funny money that's going into these homeless encampments. They're springing up everywhere. Las Vegas, by the way, the same thing has happened. The Strip, you're starting to see solid homeless encampments just everywhere along that thing, and they won't budge. The police have stood down, and they're not enforcing the vagrancy laws, and so now they're just letting this cultural transformation occur, whereby the middle class and the middle class activities in these areas is gone, and in place of it, you've got, you know, Antifa and the fentanyl brigade just occupying the streets. So they are the new culture of the area, you know, this has to be funded somehow. The idea that this is spontaneous is just preposterous. It's just sort of like the claim that, you know, BLM sprang up just organically at the heights of the, you know, COVID lockdown of the middle class. I mean, that's to me that the idea is just, you know, in terms of the timing, is just impossible. So obviously it was a, you know, it was a structure, it was a plan, and we're suffering from it, and we've got to figure a response to it.
Well, places like Las Vegas or Disney World or Disneyland, movie theaters, amusement parks, tourist destinations, these places were designed to separate the middle class from their money, right? So as the middle class gets phased out under the Great Reset, which is being rolled out under the cover of the COVID-19 pandemic, the World Economic Forum admits that. These destinations are no longer feasible or useful, so they're slowly being destroyed as well. And you can see that. So that's part of the plan. And that's why you're seeing these things being destroyed or deconstructed or just not no longer being maintained when they could be. And there's no will. And that's why you see sort of an indifference, a cold sort of indifference with the plight of the middle class small businesses, with de Blasio, who seems intent on destroying a city, and also with Cuomo, and also figures like Whitmore or Newsom. They just don't seem to care, and they seem that you get a sense that they feel a certain amount of immunity or impervious to any consequences for their actions. It's and it might be because they're in on some sort of plot. And that's how the American people should look at their government now, unfortunately. Even the White House, it's all part of this sort of this pageant, if you will, that's being put on to beguile and fool us, and as they deconstruct everything around us, take everything apart. And it's been described, I think Castro Austin Fitz called it, what America is being subject to, sort of a massive leverage buyout right now. And that's a good way to look at it. She's a money person, so that's how she views these things. And follow the money is always a very important, analytical, investigative way to find out what's really going on. It's the same way that Russia was sort of taken apart, a little different in America, but it seems to be what's going on now, because you have the destruction of small local businesses, and the only people that seem to be doing well are the large corporations like Amazon. Retail spending is up, by the way. But it's all done online. Most of it, all the increase is online, and that's empowering, Amazon and the big box stores, and at the expense of small businesses, and at the ultimately the middle class culture, local culture, and it's all part of this globalist plot. You knock everything down and reset everything. They openly admit that. But as far as provoking a civil war and unrest, they seem intent on doing that. To what level they want to bring it to, who knows? How violent they intend it to get. But if you understand what's going, look through history. There's an interesting book called Blood Money about the Civil War. And basically the book is basically sees it as a banker's plot. It says Blood Money, and he writes, the divisive antagonism between North and South, finally erupting in the spring of 1861, were not unfortunate historical accidents, nor were they results of some inexorable momentum in events. The antagonisms, rather, were de deliberately agitated during the 1850s by great international banking houses with the preconceived motive of provoking secession. And secession was to be used as a pretext for a bloody and expensive war of conquest, which was actually launched and carried out. The war was planned as a brutal slaughter, and it tragically became. The war was planned to generate a stupendous national debt, mostly represented by bonds, and such a national debt was in fact generated. The private interest acquiring these bonds successfully plotted to secure the passage of legislation which enabled them to convert the paper of by them acquired in financing the war into a new and dominant system of banking and currency under their ownership and control. And those private interests fully succeeded in their sinister program and set up a huge financial empire centered on Wall Street, from which they've ever since governed the United States from behind the scenes. Thus, the public debt generated by the American Civil War each month substantially exceeded the entire public debt generated by the American Revolution. It enabled them to induce changes in prices on the market, so they might buy when the prices fell, sell when prices rose, and thereby take windfall profits. It conferred discretion to exploit according to preconceived but secret plans by expanding credit to stimulate economic activity of one kind or another, then terminating or diminishing credit, thereby causing unanticipated reversals in fortune unrelated to the natural fluctuations of the free market, allowing lenders to acquire property by foreclosure and money adjustments. It gave them privileged access to halls of government, the opportunity to buy and sell politicians with impunity. Gave them the capacity to finance political campaigns of their favorites, to acquire dominance in the news media, and thereby sway most elections. Controlled nearly all domestic and foreign policy of the government followed as a matter of course. These private interests therefore became more powerful than the lawful government of the land. They became the de facto invisible government of the United States. Therefore, the most important consequence of the American Civil War was loss of monetary independence of the United States. And that, as a practical matter, was also loss of political independence behind the facade of freedom and democracy.
Yeah, and I think that's quite accurate. I think that's accurate. I think that's we're facing another phase of the same thing right now. It's going to be, instead of just destroying businesses and having greater oligarchic control over finances and government, I mean, this is going to be a ratcheting up of that. There's going to be FEMA camps and chips implanted in people. And then, of course, the worst thing, the thing that I'm most concerned about, is the creation of the Delta and the Epsilons with this, the vaccines that they want to give us. And so, as in the Civil War, you had the narrative that the public had, slavery and the Gettysburg Address, whatever you want to think about those things. But you also had the reality, the skull and bones controlling both sides of the political class, of Freemasonry everywhere, and then of course the Jewish banking syndicate in back of all of that. So it was just a puppet show with a lot of dead people, and at the end of it, you just had a loss of finances and freedom. And now they're using more sophisticated techniques to be able to do the same thing to us again. But the difference, one of the big differences, is that at that time they had the narrative all to themselves. There was contestation. Now, you look at the statistics on people who are worried about the vaccine. I just got a one that would indicated that for the first time, kind of a reliable poll said that it was over 70% now are questioning whether or not they're going to take it. Now, that is a spectacular number, and it is a real triumph of the independent media, because that number, the concern, is, if you trace back how that information courses and moves around, without the independent media finding out these things, and then inserting the information, and then stimulating people to keep telling other people, and then people, once they start understanding it, word of mouth, to other people, and then suddenly you end up with a supermajority. Well, we've got to do the same thing in terms of COVID, in terms of like, well, what is this about? To help us begin the process of non-compliance, where we start to refuse to cooperate with an illegitimate government and media system, and start to just develop our own a system of governance, and our own ability to defend ourselves, because it's going to come down to that. Just to digress one second, the vaccine is, I think is of course, with just the FEMA camps and the actual extermination of people that they can do in those things. But the vaccine is really, something just have to resist with force of arms if we need to, because even if this DNA changing vaccine doesn't turn you into a sterile moron, once they've established the principle that they can legally change your DNA whenever they feel it's necessary, believe me, this won't be the only time that it gets used. It's going to be on the table all of the time henceforward. So we just have to fight this tooth and nail. And and knowing things like that, for example, that your well described idea about how the Civil War was structured. I mean, this all helps, Tim. I mean, these kinds of points of information just need to get out. Anyone listens to our show, I just hope that, tomorrow morning you just over caffeinate yourself, and then just call every single person you can. And even if, the majority of them hang up on you, who cares? At this point, if you can't get people to move into a rational context, you don't need them as friends or acquaintances. I wouldn't recommend doing this with people you make money off of, but your friends and your relatives, start organizing them. Try to call them up, say, look, it's coming. If this is going to be our Armageddon, we are going to fight to the death one way or another over the next 12 months. So we have to start organizing ourselves. We've got to start getting this awareness, you know, of the malevolence of the secret society out on a wide scale. And then we have to develop a technique, you know, this asymmetrical way of fighting back where we stop complying and we start getting control over the agencies that they use to destroy us.
Yeah, yeah. The I mean, we have this election coming up, of course, in a few weeks, and there's anticipated there's a lot of unrest and controversy. May not get a clear result. They've opened up a can or created a situation. I think it's ripe for it, is because they have this mail-in voting, which has never been done on a mass level. It's always been done, you know, you can do absentee balloting, but it was ordinarily it was thought you had an obligation to show up at the polls at a certain allotted time and vote. And if you're not motivated to do that, you don't have the agency to do that, well, then tough. You're not, you shouldn't be participating in voting. But now they've more or less just created a Wild West scenario, which is just ripe for all types of claims of fraud. I think in Pennsylvania, they found thousands of ballots for Donald Trump thrown away. And so you have that going in. You're Donald Trump claiming that he's not going to accept results because of the mail-in voting. I think it's a legitimate claim, but then they're claiming Donald Trump is now, you know, going against democracy. But you know, what do you expect when you have a balloting process there, which is ripe for corruption? I mean, even when you have the disciplined environment, the relative disciplined environment of a polling centers, and there's corruption, right? Can you imagine mass mail-in voting? Then you involve the post office, an agency that can be corrupted involved in these things. But this is done on purpose because you want that anarchy. Because what's going to happen in the month of November after you know you have all these protests and say it's close, and then all of a sudden snipers show up, right? You know, like they did in Libya or in Tunisia or Yemen or in Egypt, in Cairo in 2013. Are these going to be, contractors brought in, and then they'll blame Donald Trump for it or something, the government? That's how you undermine the legitimacy of an elected government. Recently it's been exposed that I think it was John Brennan's emails that the Russia thing was Hillary Clinton's idea. Yet there's no one prosecuting Peter Stork or Hillary Clinton, these people who are involved in that attempt to impeach the president, that clown show last year. And then you have this outfit, the Transition Integrity Project. I think it's headed by Rosa Brooks, who is a longtime associate of George Soros and a recipient of Open Society funding. She's a college professor. She's also worked at the Pentagon, UC Berkeley. She worked for the Berggren Institute, which is a globalist think tank. On September 3rd, in Washington Post piece, Brooke wrote, "What's the worst that could happen? The election will likely spark violence." Oh, really? It's just a constitutional crisis, she described her formation of the Transition Integrity Project. It describes itself as a bipartisan group of over 100 current and former senior government and campaign leaders, academics, journalists, polling experts, and former federal and state government officials formed out of concern about the potential disruption to 2020 U.S. presidential election and transition by the RNC. The organization was formed in late 2019. Oh, that's convenient. Just around the same time of Event 201, beginning of the pandemic. The organization claims members. It has RNC Chair Michael Steele, neocon Bill Kristol, John Podesta, Donna Brazile, other participants, political strategists, journalists, and pollsters, social media experts, former career officials from the intelligence community and Justice Department, and the military and DHS. All were members. They all have one thing in common. They all oppose Trump. The purpose of the TIP was for its players to create a new series of self-described war games. So they play out these scenarios of a narrow Biden win, a big Biden win, a Trump win with electoral college, but a large popular vote loss, as in 2016, a period of extended uncertainty, as we saw in the 2000 elections. So with the exception of the big Biden win scenario, each scenario foresees unrest and protest, which can be, heightened or used as a basis to spark a civil war. So what that sounds like is they're doing their part in a color revolution here in the United States.
Yeah, exactly. They're setting up a color revolution style civil war. What else can you, how else can you describe it? And you even got Soros in there giving people, these people money. So, okay, Trump ekes out a narrow electoral college victory with some states having legal challenges to, voter fraud or whatever,
Because the
voters.
mail-in voting.
Yeah, mail-in voting. So the Democrats refuse to accept the election. That's one scenario that leads to civil war. Another scenario is Biden wins big, but Trump goes, well, he stole the election. We've got all of this. And so I can't really, certify him as the president. Okay, so now that leads to civil war. So it looks like all roads lead to, America being destroyed. Because this, of course, is the goal here. America is simply destroyed from within. We do our own destruction. The Antifa BLM, brigades will march out into the suburbs where, they'll meet the Proud Boys, and we'll just shoot it out. There, of course, will need to be martial law and FEMA camps to control this. COVID will be flaring up. Cases will be in the hundreds of millions at this point, probably. And there will be, a FEMA camp for everyone. So this is a time I'm fantasizing, but unfortunately, it isn't, science fiction. I mean, these are kind of actual plausible chains of events that could have happened over the next 60 days. So, this is a great time to sit down and kind of work out who you can exchange information with, and who you can count on. In terms of like, well, how to actually physically defend yourself, this is just has to be community by community kinds of decisions. I wouldn't even want to enter into that. I think there will be a need to defend yourself. I think it's very much a need to do that, to know how to do it. If I could talk to the BLM Antifa zealots, I would say, look, you guys are being pranked. You're being led off a cliff. The people who have created your ideology, who are giving you these hundreds of millions of dollars and the weapons and the free time, and the revving up your hatred, they're the same ones that took the black culture in 1950 and destroyed it over the next 40 years. It's the exact same group. And now they're just going to sit back and watch as you and the middle class shoot it out with one another. So this is, I would advocate to them to do the same kind of refusal to comply. Don't let the insane zealots. Remember, at the beginning of the Rittenhouse shootout in Kenosha, the white defenders, I don't know if they were Proud Boys, but they were, it was a group of white guys that had been organized. They all had ARs, but they were they came and confronted the BLM and Antifa protesters, and there's a video scene of them talking to each other before the violence. And you could see that some of the individuals and the Antifa side were either insane or were paid operatives to create violence. One of the guys who then again got shot, I claimed he was a victim of, he could talk in tongues. He was like, he had become a white guy who had turned himself into a,
Is that Rosenbaum, the guy,
Rosenbaum. He turned
child
himself
molester?
a black rap star with that kind of violent vocabulary and slang stuff. But this is not a real individual. This is an individual who's either mentally ill or is a very sophisticated agent. You don't want, if you're like a black intellectual or someone who is a, in the Antifa or BLM strata, you don't want that person to be your leader. He's the only thing that guy can do is lead you into the grave. So it would be nice if voices could reach both sides and try to advocate restraint. We really don't want to enter into a process of a civil war like we had in the 1860s, where we just slaughtered one another. This will be a very difficult thing to do because I think it's hard to if you're like a in a Kenosha type situation and BLM shows up in buses and the people are armed and they start shattering
Yeah, you want to
business.
defend your property and your neighborhood,
Well,
yeah.
and also what if they start walking into the middle class areas?
Yeah.
So it's almost a little late for this line of thought. It's just a hope that I would have that it would be possible to have this effect to some extent. I don't think it is possible. I think it is too late. I think there will be a contested election. Antifa is going to march into the middle class, and I think the middle class had better be prepared for it. It's really that simple. America is pretty much over as a nation of laws, and for the foreseeable future, it's just going to be a battlefield.
Well, this was foreseen by America's demographic changes, which were imposed upon it. You know, going back to
Sure.
1965, they knew if they created a multicultural, mosaic of different, conflicting ethnic groups, you won't get a cohesive nation or identity. Or it's a tradition of what law and order existed. It was largely a function of heritage America, invite the third world, get the third world, and especially in those mass numbers, because you won't have any sense of any ability to assimilate or restrain the impulses of these people as they come in, and that's foreseen. That's why it's done in the first place. It's sort of a weaponized migration, and also you heard a lot of talk the entire Trump presidency has been the whole impeachment began almost immediately, the whole Russian thing. Collusion, first there was the idea that Russian hacking the elections. What does that mean? People thought, whoa, they t actually getting into the ballots, into the voting machines and switching votes. No, it wasn't that. Then there was influence. What does that mean? And then it turns out there was maybe posting ads on Facebook, Russia. Well, either way, they're talking about the influence of foreign involvement in American elections. Of course, when you talk about that, the media never talks about, say, Zionist or international Jewish influence in the elections.
What about
Israel,
that? Yeah,
AIPAC,
what about that, Tim?
and various Jewish billionaires and oligarchs who are transnationals or cosmopolitan,
Well, how about
like
the
George Soros,
Soros?
like George Soros'
Yeah.
funding of these DAs in the various cities, intentionally, down balloting funding of elections, installing agents of discord who fail to enforce the law, follow the law, protect the property rights of the taxpayers. Go after those who are defending property, like the McCluskeys in St. Louis. That's what Kim Gardner, she's a Soros-funded, agent, or Kyle Rittenhouse in Wisconsin. They're prosecuting them, or the bar owner who committed suicide just for defending his property. He was facing indictment, and so or you have the guy Krasner in Philadelphia. You have Ellison in Minnesota, and these are all agents of discord. And by the way, what country does George Soros live in? Who is he a citizen of? What is he?
Switzerland.
Is he Switzerland? Well,
Yeah.
okay, let's talk about Swiss collusion in the American elections.
Right. But of course, bear in mind that he's an artificial, he's like Martin Luther King. I mean, Soros is the
Well, yeah,
Rothschild.
that's what I mean. Let's work up the ladder to the World Economic Forum and these
They talk about
cosmopolitan
like that.
oligarchs
Yeah, he's
who
a
are
business.
in the process of, first of all, coordinating a false pandemic to defraud and destroy the economies and the lives of billions of the lives of billions of people, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of Americans, so they can have their vision of a great reset implemented. Soros is a part of that set, I guess. So, I mean, what about that collusion? Isn't collapsing the global economy in effect, colluding in an election? Involving itself in an election because you're changing the circumstances and you know that this is going to cause political turmoil. And so all this stuff is you talk about fomenting a civil war. Well, you create economic collapse. Yeah, you're going to foment lots of civil wars all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, Google Facebook and the iPhone has much more influence on American elections than Russia ever could, and they're all controlled by the oligarch banking family class. You know, yeah. So it's just
and
so
also backdoor technology, which it takes us, which Tel Aviv has access to. I don't think Russia has access to all our operating systems like Tel Aviv does.
So somehow the Jewish influence is not on the table as something that can be scrutinized or
what happened to Newt Gingrich?
Issue, but
what happened to Newt Gingrich on Fox News? When he...
Yeah, that was really important. I don't know if that. I mean, you have to wonder what's being communicated with that, but it's very significant because Gingrich was so appropriate to bring up the idea that the DAs that had forced the police to stand down and had let Antifa destroy the cities, they were all funded through Soros.
Yes.
And so why isn't this something that every American is talking about, every American wearing? It's not really can even be remotely considered a conspiracy theory. It's kind of open society brags about having done all this. But why can't we discuss it as something that was done to destroy the country, like the color revolution, ideas that are always being, have always been in use in other nations. So when Gingrich gets basically, just stonewalled, you can see the power of control over what is the appropriate inappropriate influence in election, and then what can't even be discussed. So it's so this is this will be a really interesting month.
Well, look what they've done with the mask. They've put mask people against non-mask wearing people.
That's another that could be a second kind of civil war. The whole I've seen a few YouTube videos of fights now that have broken out by hysterical mask wearing people.
Yeah, by the way, overwhelmingly the aggressors are always the mask wearing people.
Yeah, the mask wearers are they're aggressive, and then they're almost always very left wing too.
Yes.
It's odd. Yeah, this is the Republicans seem to be right on this issue. They seem to be on the correct side of the mask issue. So
yeah, basically they're trying to it's similar to the Civil War, like there was Uncle Tom's Cabin and Bleeding Kansas and these things by supporting, sending guns in to stir up the violence, but also to create a media environment, where one thing, everything one side believes about the other side is false, and Chris, and the other side believes it's being insulted, and so you have a makings for everyone. You're creating conditions where people will be able to kill each other eventually.
Yeah. Well, the Civil War was very tidy in terms of a genocide because you had, the blue and the gray.
Yeah.
Our genocide is going to be a lot more messy because Antifa and BLM they're really not that color identifiable. They don't wear uniforms and whatnot. But also their ideology and what they're opposing and for are not, it's just amorphous. The white middle class is also much more amorphous. We're not divided into states. It's these enclaves that these people live in that are at risk. So it's going to be. I think some places won't even know that it's going on, and in other places, it'll be life and death. Kenosha was a really good example. Who would ever thought that was going to become a battlefield?
Yeah, and it only became a battlefield because the local authorities who are paid to maintain the peace and keep order just simply didn't do it.
Yeah, one thing I would recommend, Tim, is know who your DA is, and try to understand the kind of what your local population is relative to BLM or Proud Boys, things like that. If you're in an area that is controlled by a Soros DA, boy, I would really consider leaving because those are not going to be safe areas. Those are places that obviously they're going to send in Antifa if you get a situation where there's a contested election and violence is breaking out on wide scale. Those are the places the violence will be breaking out on a wide scale. So those You know what? This would kind of be a useful thing. There should be a Soros DA map presented to the public so people can identify where they are, and we can have like a risk assessment, you know, like what level is your genocide? You know, are you know, like yellow, red, blue, and try to help people with information like that, because man, oh man, I mean, I just don't think that the middle class are, you know, it just, they aren't going to be viable in the Soros DA zones, because even if they're armed to the teeth, I mean, you know, how will you live? You know, what kind of a life are you going to have in this area? You know, it's just tragic, Tim, because a lot of these people can't move. They don't have the wherewithal to move. I mean, how are they moved? They, you know, it's, if they're in a Soros DA area, their real estate value is already tanked. They probably can't even get their mortgage back for their house. They have social and family connections all around them. I mean, what can they do? At that point, all you can do is just prepare to defend yourself. But
well, if you had a government that was sovereign and actually dedicated to doing what the 14th Amendment is supposed to do, they could. The government could go, the Justice Department could go after these.
But you know, I honestly, Tim, what I would tell them is that, look, the government is illegitimate.
Yeah.
And the government is using Antifa to destroy you. So that means that the legitimate government, the real government, is the government you set up. And that's what I've been kind of alluding to all of this time, and is that you have to set up your own government. You have to become
lawyers could like they did in Oklahoma City. You could impanel in each of these states grand juries to investigate malfeasance of these DAs and the local governments, and set up citizen committees. This is what you do eventually. This is what happens when you confront the reality that the government now is a vassal state of oligarchs, and they're no longer even given the pretense of defending your interest, defending your property, what you supposedly pay for, and what you elect.
Yeah,
that's what people have to realize now. And that in some areas it's more obvious than others. You know, may not be the case in South Dakota. It is the case in Washington State. It may not be so much the case in Georgia. Maybe there's more of a dispute there than it is maybe in North Carolina. Politically it's very difficult because we've been subjected to decades and decades of infiltration and gradual corruption, and now finally it's becoming the point where it can no longer be denied. Although, you know, people will do it, will stick their head in the sand and deny as much as long as they can because it's unpleasant.
Yeah, that's about all they have left is just the head in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
The country is just it's as trashed as a middle class retail area in a Soros DA zone. I mean, it's, you know, whatever government is left is it's going to be promoting and funding Antifa. The citizenry to a large extent will be fentanyl. Brigade, you know, just epsilons and deltas. I mean, how does the middle class fit into that?
Well, it doesn't. That's the plan. It's,
yeah.
I mean,
so we got
I
to
think,
establish sovereignty.
Yeah.
And run it. I mean, like the succession has to be all middle class enclaves need to organize and say, we're out. We are. You know, no more. We're not going to pay taxes. We are just out. And we're going to set up little sovereignty zones all over the place, and then organize among ourselves then to try to, you know, push the noncompliance into the military, into every single police department we can. You know, they're going to be defunding all of these police departments. The middle class enclave should be, you know, have a welcome defunded police party. To hire all of these individuals.
Well, that's the fun thing. The thing is with your defunding the police, what it does is it clarifies the situation and says, well, you know, ordinarily the deal is you think the police are there to protect you and your property, that's what you pay your taxes for. But if they're defunded, then the people, well, we got to defend ourselves.
Right. Right.
know,
And but I
we
mean
gotta
the point of
defend our property ourselves now, so you know.
yeah, I just think that a lot of the police that have been defunded, they should be identified. I think the ones that they defunded, kicked out, are actually the best ones. So there should be, this would be a pretty easy thing to organize. You could do it online and just, if you are a police person who has been defunded, contact your local micro sovereign and volunteer your services and see if they can help you move in to the area and help them set up their own police force, because as they have broken these things apart, we should try to take whatever pieces we can and use them for our own defense.
Yeah, and I think the idea is to try to create a national force, which can be more centrally controlled, and by delegitimizing local policing with these things, And what's happening, perhaps in some of these cities, is you destroy them so they can be, properties can be bought cheaply, and they can resurrect them as sort of smart cities or enclaves, maybe for, wealthy foreign nationals. I heard a story in Ireland, a Taiwanese billionaire, or maybe it was Hong Kong, is building a sovereign city in Ireland for his fellow Chinese. At least he's trying to get the approval for that. And it's going to be its own little city state, like Disneyland.
I mean, I've seen so many allusions to the idea that the deal with the Chinese is to give them the West Coast,
Yes.
Hawaii, these places. There's certainly something going on
Look at
between.
Vancouver, apparently. Yeah, it's.
So again, it's just one more problem for the European middle class to deal with. However, there might be an ally in the Japanese. I've been trying to get communications with people there forever, and also the common person in China is going to not really benefit. This is going to be, I mean, if they start depopulating, believe me, the Chinese population is going to reduce faster than anyone. So there could be some very motivated people there to end the current political structure. Allies will be wherever we can find them, however we can make them. We have to do asymmetrical response to
Yeah, like
this.
the was that Hasidic Jewish community in Brooklyn that was burning the masks.
Right. Yeah, those guys were great. And that, I mean, I don't know if that's theater or real, but whatever. This is the right approach. You just have to take your mask and burn them. Non-compliance.
Yeah, of course they have the ethnic identity and community cohesion to
Well,
actually cause trouble for
exactly right.
the
Now that
mayor.
if the Irish had been permitted to stay intact in Philadelphia, for example, no way this mass stuff would be, being used against that kind of a group. They would do the same thing. They would just burn all the mass and just tell the cops to stay out.
Yeah, and their churches would have been bought out, as the Catholic Church apparently has in the United States, so.
So anyway, it's another week of suspense as we move toward the coming anarchy. What do you think, Tim? Anything you'd like to give as advice over the next week or so for people listening to it?
Over the next week,
Yeah.
don't believe anything the news tells you, because that's the same as last week.
Touche, buddy. Yeah, the same thing. Yeah, that's right. Good point.
Turn off the television.
Yeah, just turn it
Think.
off.
Start thinking critical again. Turn your brain back on. Take the mask off. Turn on the brain.
Yeah, and call your friends
Yeah.
and acquaintances. Just get in touch. The lockdown, you can see how well designed this whole thing is, that they've broken apart the last sort of social connections with the COVID nonsense. Well, you have to overcome
Yeah,
that.
just like the casual suggestion that just because you receive a positive test from a test which is not no way in any sense reliable, that a young mother would separate herself from her 10-month-old child for 14 days.
It's just it completely, to me, that was just I think the whole Trump White House super spreader story is just theater.
Yes.
It's just trying to, to they're trying to get at, if you look at the mask and non-mask, you can see that the non-mask zealots are typically right wings, So with Trump coming down with COVID, and then with the staff also having, and particularly this heartbreaking story about the staff member sequestering from the child, they're just trying to create the sense of a real pandemic, because this is how the pandemic becomes real, is through these stories that manipulate us
Well, they
emotionally.
create this false reality. Like, it was a Joe Biden says during the debate, people will, as they have dinner and they look at the empty chair in the dining room table from their family member who died from COVID. Apparently, throughout the country, it's like that millions have died. Is it? What are you
Millions
talking
of
about?
people have died.
What are you
Yeah,
talking
I
about?
mean, it's like you know my analysis of the number of people who've died from COVID in the United States. The best number is zero. There isn't anybody. The only group that has actually had any significant mortality is the over 70, and it's the same percentage as the percentile of comorbidity in this group, which of course all of these individuals had, or virtually all of them. And whatever is left after you subtract out the fake COVID deaths who actually died from the comorbidity, well, now you just get the false positives and a few other quirks. And at the end of the analysis, you end up with, well, there's nobody. There just really isn't anyone. And this is why, Tim, if you ask to see, like I have, go to the county coroner and say, I'd really like to get, can you share the blood work with the public so we can see what the virus count is? And well, no, they don't do that. We'd have no idea. So it's never done.
Yeah, there was the CDC came out today a couple of days ago that said they don't have a isolated COVID or SARS-CoV-2 virus available.
Right. I know. That
So
was
how do you
hilarious.
create a vaccine for it?
Well, that was Rappaport was all over that, and I thought it was really
It's
a apt
unavailable.
call. Yeah, and people have criticized
It's
Rappaport. They're saying,
unavailable.
"What are you talking about? Korea isolated it." But the problem is, it's this complicated business, very technical. I've looked into it and still don't quite have my head around it. But you have to purify, you have to isolate, and then purify, and then you have to take pictures of the thing,
Well, then you have
and
to do like
that
the Cox
three.
postulates, which
Yeah,
is
that's
actually an
Cox
active agent.
postulate.
This is actually
It's never
causing
been
the
done.
illness.
And then when you have the CD saying, well, we don't actually have any isolated viruses available, so we're just going to use the sort of pre-existing wisdom. I mean, this is just preposterous. The idea that
This is science.
we're dealing with science or something. These are just stories, fantasies that they're using to keep the sheep mesmerized for another couple weeks.
It's same way you have Fauci 1 month he's telling you not to wear a mask and going in detail why not to wear a mask. Then the next month he's saying you have to wear a mask. He says then one day he says, was it he's, you know, basically if you're asymptomatic you can spread it, but then he says that pandemic's never been driven by asymptomatic people. Then why the lockdown? I mean, it's like,
It's just there's
I
this.
don't have a medical degree, but I understand logic. I'm sorry.
Well, and there's no there's no logic. There's no clear chain of established facts that are being used to drive policy. It's like the FEMA camps. The FEMA camps are not driven by science. They're just driven by mind control and raw satanic evil. Now there's a postulate, there's a premise. This is really what we're trying to deal with. You want to understand what's going on now, just look at the picture of Jacob Rothschild and Maria Abramovich in front of the Masonic painting entitled Satan Summons His Legions. And this was released just after Abramovich had done that infamous commercial for Bill Gates. So this is what we're dealing with. They've slithered in to the political and media class, and now they're controlling us through our desire to comply with what we think is a political system that we're a part of. And we have made an enormous blunder that we have to quickly erase, which is that we think that we are part of the political system. We aren't. The political system is owned by those people, by Abramovich and Jacob Rothschild and Satan. And we are not, you know, we can vote, we can choose between whichever Satanists they provide for us to vote for, but we don't get to pick them. We don't get to pick who we are going to have our emotional theater, you know, election over. They pick them and they control them. And now they have developed enough technology so they think that a very tiny group can exterminate everybody. Mm-hmm. And so this is what we're dealing with. It's not, you know, a drill. This is our day-to-day reality. Every day we need to...
Here's the irony of it all is that, you know, during the Spanish influenza, you really didn't need lockdowns because people were so sick. It was pretty much obvious when someone was stricken with this thing. So people quarantined themselves, okay? Well, when you have something which is mild or non-existent, you have to have the false lockdowns because no one's going to be sick enough to quarantine themselves. So it has to be faked. So the lockdown itself, all the impositions, the restrictions, this is all theater. And it creates just like the mask wearing. It's why all of a sudden we started wearing the masks. So, you know, June, they started wearing masks. I thought it was March was the big, you know. And it all creates the theater of a crisis. And yeah, so just wait until, you know, a month from now when we're in the middle of cold and flu season. Any of your little sniffle, chest congestion, headaches, you mean, oh, it's COVID-19, you know, when you have COVID-19 or 20, whatever it is then. But I'm saying it's the oddest thing where, you know, general symptoms now, well, it's this and that. So anyone can say to have the symptoms because the symptoms are so general. You know?
Yeah, the symptoms are I have all of the symptoms every morning I wake up. I'm in my 70s, for God's sake. This is just my normal life. I mean, they could put me in the FEMA camp 10 times over with just like Tuesday morning.
Yes.
You know? So there, again, there is no scientific basis for any of this. There's no way they can actually truly identify a virus. And with having a headache or a cough or a slight fever as a way to put you into a FEMA camp with no end in sight. This is just like what that Masonic witch Jardin in New Zealand did.
Yes.
Where she said, look, you know, from now on, we can just, if we think you're symptomatic, we're putting you in quarantine, and then we will tell you when you can get out.
Yeah.
End of the legal process. Legal process is completely gone. Now it's just the jackbooted thug shows up, separates you from your kids, and throws you in a camp.
Well, the other thing is there is no universal standard for a positive test result. It varies state to state, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. This is the same problem they had with the so-called AIDS test, the AIDS antibody test. You know, antibody test doesn't say anything because all it shows is it shows you have antibodies for a coronavirus, of which there are over 200. You've had some exposure to it. They don't distinguish between cellular debris or leftover, nor do they demonstrate that it's actually the agent that's causing the illness. There's no proof of that because that's not quantitative, which you'd have to have for an illness to set in based on, you know, conventional virology. The PCR test is that, you know, they magnify it, and as the more you magnify it, the more distorted it gets, the more less reliable it gets. Apparently, you're not supposed to do it more than 35 times, and they're doing it 45, 50 times.
You really shouldn't do it more than 20 or 22 times for accuracy. We've been doing it 40, which means that
I think the CDC or New York Times in their news says anything above 35 is useless.
Right. Well, above 35 is just incomprehensible. Yeah. But we've been doing 40, and it's a geometric progression, so it's not like five more; it's like 5,000 times more. But whatever, it isn't a meaningful, you know, test. Obviously, I mean, the New York Times article pointed out that they had a 9 out of 10 could be false positives, wherein they were detecting either human DNA that had a similar, you know, genetic strand to what they're comparing it to, or to dead viruses. Mm-hmm. And all humans all have dead coronaviruses within us. We all have them.
Well, isn't that the problem of the whole germ theory? Is that if indeed that we're occasionally threatened by a virulent virus that can rampage through society, that of the trillions that exist, that we would have been wiped out long ago?
Yeah.
Just mathematically.
You know, I mean, this is like a big digression, but it just, for whatever it's worth. I mean, like my wife and I we don't eat or put any toxins into our body. I mean, we just don't. We kind of gave up, you know, various reasons. We weren't really crazed hippies, but we just didn't, for some reason, 20 years ago, we decided, yeah, we won't go to doctors. We, you know, we're healthy to begin with, but we started eating organic. Tim, at this point, well, the few people that I knew that haven't died, because most of them are simply dead, which is sort of, I've clearly won the battle in that regard. But the ones who are left who are like our age, they're old people. I mean, they're like, some of them are like in walkers and Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And we're spunky like, you know, teenagers. And so there it is. I mean, this is you can just see it with this small sample size, but just in general, no toxicity, no disease. So it's an environment, it's a terrain issue. It isn't, you know, germs and things. We're exposed to exactly the same germs as everyone else is. But we have endless energy and we never get sick and everyone else is just grasping for straws. You know, like you go to Costco and you look at the line of invalids in those scooters trying to get their hands on the chemicals. It is a pathetic sight. It is a pathetic sight what they've done to Americans with these chemicals. I mean, they've turned us into a nation of, well, the deltas and epsilons, and the deltas and epsilons are not very physically attractive. You know, they're
well. You
they're
have people like lining up drive-through at McDonald's with their masks on. And I, you know, you could save more lives by shutting down. It really
just close the McDonald's.
Shutting down fast food. Restaurants. And then you say that's an assault. Yeah, but that'd be less of an assault than we're experiencing now.
Yeah, you want to save life, you board up the CVS pharmacy and
exactly.
And blow up the McDonald's and you will save, I swear, far more lives than mask wearing could ever save.
Yes.
100 times more. So, you know, this is just the world we live in. The world has been designed to make us weak, and now since we're weak, it's being structured so we will accidentally genocide ourselves. Well, I vote no, Tim. I think we should resist.
Okay, Joe.
All right, buddy. Well, have a great week. Gosh, it's just so exciting. It's almost like we're some kind of serial show that's going to come to a dramatic conclusion here. Well, anyway, we'll see you next week, buddy. It's going to be an interesting one.
Okay, take it easy.
All right, talk. Yeah, take it. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye. Thank you.